This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Dalby Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
The night sky in June. Well, to be honest, we don't have very much of a night sky. If you live in the north of Scotland, it probably will never get truly dark throughout the whole of the night. But those of us that live further south, then at least it can get reasonably dark, and there are still things to see. Well, what about the stars that we can see when the sun has finally set and twilight has gone? Over in the west is that rather nice constellation of Leo the Lion, rather like the lions in Trafalgar Square, squatting on its haunches. The rear star of Leo is called Denebola. Between it and quite a bright star called Arcturus, in the constellation of Bootes, is the constellation of Coma Berenices. And that is where we're looking towards the largest cluster in the immediate part of our universe, called the Virgo Cluster. It partly extends into the Virgo constellation below. Coming over from Arcturus, there's a rather nice little circlet of stars called Corona Borealis, the Northern Crown. And then an interesting constellation called Hercules. The four brightest stars make up what is called the Keystone, rather like that piece of stone at the top of a bridge, which is somewhat angled. If you've got binoculars, and you move about two-thirds of the way up from the lower right star, hopefully you'll see a little bit of a fuzzy glow, and that's a lovely globular cluster called M13. As you move over towards the east, a very bright star is visible. That is Vega, in the very small constellation of Lyra the Lyre. Again with binoculars, if you look a little bit to the left of it, you'll come across one of the most beautiful sights we have actually in the northern heavens. It's called the Double Double. With binoculars, you'll see a double star, Epsilon Lyrae. However, if you observe with a telescope, when the seeing is good, the atmosphere is calm, you can see that each of those is itself a double, hence the name, the Double Double. As the night moves on, then that lovely constellation of Cygnus the Swan, with its bright star Deneb, is rising. And lower down, nearer the southeastern horizon, is the star Altair in Aquila the Eagle. Those three stars, Vega, Deneb, and Altair, make up what is called the Summer Triangle. A nice thing to look for with binoculars is to move about a third of the way up from Altair towards Vega. It's actually a rather darker region of the Milky Way, which is passing along this way, is called the Cygnus Rift. In that region is a rather nice little asterism called Brocky's Cluster, or in fact, the coat hanger, because it looks just like a coat hanger upside down. Well, what about the planets? Well, Jupiter has been in the sky for quite a few months now. It's still just about there. It was seen in a very close grouping with Venus and Mercury towards the end of May. And in fact, quite a number of our own astronomical society were able to take some very nice photographs. They were within about 2.5 degrees of each other. It's still at magnitude -1.8. Not that bright, actually, because it's seen against the glare of the sun. And to be honest, by the second week of June, it's basically lost in the sun's glare, to re-emerge into the pre-dawn sky towards the end of next month. Well, Saturn, of course, has been at its best the last 2 months. It's lying in Virgo. It's just to the west of south as darkness falls. It is down to the lower left of the first magnitude star, Spica, Alpha Virginis, and should appear a little brighter and with a yellowish hue. Its magnitude is dropping as it moves further away from us, and the angular size decreases from 18.5 to 17.8 arc seconds. It's closing on to the +4.2 magnitude star, Kappa Virginis, and we're just 0.5 degrees away by month's end. As I'm sure you know, the rings have now opened out. They're about 17 degrees to the line of sight. So, with a small scope and good seeing, you should be able to spot Cassini's division between the two outer main rings. Also, Saturn's largest moon, Titan. Sadly, Saturn is now moving towards the most southerly part of the ecliptic, so the elevation doesn't get that high even when on the meridian due south. and this will get worse, in fact, for quite a few years to come. Well, Mercury was seen at the end of last month. It's in fact forming a line with Venus and Jupiter on the first of the month. With a magnitude of minus 0.4, it'll be the faintest of the three, but in fact the highest in the sky. It reaches greatest eastern elongation, and that's when it's furthest in angle from the Sun, on the 12th of June, with an angular separation from it of about 24 degrees. Best seen about 30 minutes after sunset. In fact, this is the best evening apparition of Mercury this year. A telescope will show it as an 8 arc second, slightly gibbous disk. On the 18th of the month, it will be just 2.1 degrees to the left of Venus, and the day later, 1.9 degrees to its lower left. Binoculars may well be needed to spot Mercury, having first found Venus, but of course, don't use them until the Sun has set. Mars. Mars passed behind the Sun on April the 18th and actually will appear in the pre-dawn sky this month, rising about 30 minutes before the Sun on the 1st of June, shining at a magnitude of plus 1.4. You'd need a telescope to see it then, but by the end of month it will actually lie about 7 degrees above the eastern horizon at this time and should be visible in binoculars. But again, cease using any optical aids, telescopes or binoculars, once the Sun has risen. Finally, Venus. Well, it begins June shining at magnitude minus 3.8, about 8 degrees above the western horizon, half an hour after sunset. In contrast to many of its apparitions, when we see it fairly high in the sky, the fact that the plane of the ecliptic is at a shallow angle to the horizon in midsummer means that it will never rise that high in the sky this summer. It reaches a maximum elevation of only about 10 degrees around the 20th to 25th of the month. It's towards the far side of the Sun. Its 10 arc second disk will be seen almost fully illuminated with a small telescope, a phase in fact of 96% at the start of June, dropping only to 91% by its end. Well, finally, what about some highlights? Well, I've mentioned the fact that you can find the globular cluster M13 in Hercules and the double-double in Laro. What else could we look for? Well, rather nicely, around the 6th of June, you could quite easily spot an asteroid. In fact, in this case, Ceres. It's going to pass just below the star Pollux in Germany, which will be setting towards the west. So about an hour after sunset, on the 5th to the 7th of June, seek out the star Pollux, which is the head of the left hand of the Hevelian twins as we see them, the lower left star of the pair Castor and Pollux. The asteroid Ceres, shining at magnitude 8.8, will lie within 1 degree below. And there's only one other object of that sort of magnitude in the field of view, a star of magnitude 8.4 nearby. So you should pick it up quite easily with binoculars, and it'd be lovely if it proved to be clear for 2 or 3 nights to observe its movement from the 5th to the 7th. And on the night sky page, I've actually put a chart showing precisely where it will be relative to Pollux on those 3 nights. On June the 10th, there's a nice close grouping of Mercury, Venus, and a very thin crescent moon. You might have a chance to see Earth shine, the dark part of the moon, but illuminated by reflected light from the Earth. Again, you'll need a very low western horizon to spot them, and you may well need binoculars to pick up Mercury. And finally, on June the 18th, there'll be a very nice gibbous moon very close to Spica in Virgo, and not far from Saturn. So that'll be just a nice little thing to look at, hopefully on a clear night. Let's hope we do get some clear nights this month. They've been rather few and far between. You have to stay up a bit late, but maybe it's worth doing so.
Thanks for that, Ian. Now, John Field tells us what you can see in the southern night sky.
Kia ora, and welcome to the June Johncast from Wellington, New Zealand. We in the southern hemisphere are now experiencing our long winter nights and our short days. Our southeastern evening sky is dominated by the zodiac constellations of Scorpius and following Sagittarius the Archer. The red star Antares marks the heart of the Scorpion. This name means the rival of Mars. This red giant star is the 16th brightest star in our night sky and is estimated to be 600 light years away. It has an estimated diameter 800 times greater than our Sun and is 10,000 times brighter. To Māori and some Polynesian cultures, Scorpius is seen as a fishing hook, a much more familiar item here in the South Pacific. One of the Māori names for Antares is Rehua, and it marks the eye of the hook and the blood of Māori staining the hook. Straddling the Milky Way, the region around Scorpius is home to a number of star clusters and nebulae, which are easily observed. Nearby to Antares are two globular clusters, M4 and NGC 6144. The M prefix and number are from the catalogue created by Charles Messier of 110 comet-like objects, published in 1771. The NGC is a new general catalogue of 7,840 objects that were compiled by John Dreyer and published in 1895. M4 is the brighter of the two and is easily seen in binoculars and from a dark sky and may be visible with the unaided eye. Along the curved body of the scorpion there are a number of visual double stars that make a lovely sight to the unaided eye, binoculars and telescopes. Using a digital camera on a tripod and using a wide-angle lens and a 30-second exposure, you can catch a lovely image of this region showing the many star clusters and the structure of the Milky Way. Near the stinger of the scorpion, we find a naked-eye cluster that appears like a comet. Called NGC 6231, this cluster of stars is similar in size to the Pleiades, but further away at 6,000 light-years. The stars in this cluster are much brighter than those in the Pleiades, and if placed at the same distance, they would shine as bright as Sirius, making a stunning sight in our night sky. Also nearby to the stinger, we find the star cluster M7. Appearing as a haze to the unaided eye, this cluster makes a nice view in binoculars or wide-field telescopes. Also in this region, but much fainter, is the butterfly cluster M6 at a distance of 1,300 light-years. The neighbouring constellation Sagittarius is host to a large number of nebulae along with many open and globular star clusters. These range in size from large and bright to small and faint. The constellation represents an archer in Babylonian mythology. The brightest stars of Sagittarius form an asterism, called the teapot. This region is home to a large number of interesting objects. Lambda Sagittarii marks the top of the teapot, and nearby is the globular cluster M22. It is one of the brightest in our night sky and can be easily found in binoculars. Perhaps the most spectacular clusters and nebulae are the Lagoon and Triton. The Lagoon Nebula is known as M8, and it gets its name as it appears as a compact cluster of stars surrounded by a circle of nebulosity with a dark rift. The western part of M8 is dominated by two bright 6-magnitude stars. The eastern part has a loose cluster of stars. The Triton, or M20, is seen as a small region of nebulosity nearby to the Lagoon. With a 200mm or greater telescope in a dark sky, it should be possible to spot the dark veins that split the nebulosity into three sections. M23 is an open cluster 2,000 light-years away consisting of over 100 stars being visible forming curving arcs and chains. M24 is a bright region of stars and is often called the small Sagittarius star cloud. This cloud includes a number of dark nebulae superimposed on a brilliant starry background. M25 is a bright open cluster with a number of deep yellow stars about 2,000 light-years away. M55 at magnitude 7.4 is a bright globular cluster and was discovered in 1752. Binoculars will reveal it as a hazy star and progressively larger telescopes will reveal more and more stars. The Milky Way is at its brightest, widest and densest in the region around Scorpius and Sagittarius. The Arabians called the Milky Way Al-Nahar, the river. The Chinese refer to it as the river of heaven. To Māori it is Te Ikaroa, the long fish. Today we know we are looking along the plane of our galaxy and seeing the glow of the many distant stars stretching around our sky. The region of Sagittarius is in the direction of the galactic centre, about 30,000 light-years distant. The dark lanes visible in this region are clouds of dust and gas that may eventually form star clusters. Closer to home we have the planet Saturn in our evening sky towards the north and well placed for viewing. Venus in the west after sunset along with Mercury. And on the 10th of June both will be joined by the Moon. Venus and Mercury will be at their closest on the 20th, when they will be 2 degrees apart, after which they will begin to separate. By the 22nd of June, Venus will be near the star Pollux in Gemini, and Mercury will begin moving back towards the Sun. The southern winter solstice is on the 21st of June, and marks the time when the Sun rises and sets at its most northerly points. Many cultures saw this as an important time, and held special celebrations to mark this date. In Aotearoa, New Zealand, the dawn rising of Makariki, Pleiades, or Puanga Rigel, coincided with our winter solstice. The rising of these stars were used by Māori to mark the arrival of the new calendar year called Te Maramataka. Many other cultures in the Southern Hemisphere also use the Pleiades in their calendars. We hope you have enjoyed our Jodcast, and we wish you all clear skies.